there's a lot of hate going on. You pop a cherry with an orgy and it's all good.
Really, really talented, handsome young man.
Don't walk in here with a giant banana and think everything's going to be peaches.
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Monday, April 11th, 2011. I'm your host, Adam Barry, and joining me today, two guys who had phenomenal springs. We got Anthony Chang.
Hello, everybody.
And special guest, back from the dead, a.k.a. the Miami Herald, we got Mike McCall.
Where am I? I don't even recognize this place anymore.
I don't recognize you without the purple visor from Mochi.
That's true. It's a white visor.
White visor, the purple shirt, right? Yeah. And the purple sweatbands?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
If when I want.
Oh, okay.
If it's a big game night, then, I'll throw on some sweatbands.
That's fair. All right, I guess we have a lot to talk about today. We're talking Florida spring football. It is over, thank God. The orange and blue debut was quote-unquote played Saturday. That happened, so we've got a lot. Now that we've actually seen Florida play, we can more or less talk about some things from the spring and draw our own conclusions independently. So let's just go around here and the one thing that stood out to you from the spring game more than anything. Let's start with Mike.
The offense does not appear to be any better. My thoughts going into this game were, it's a spring game, a lot of people are hurt, they're not going to show everything they can on offense, so you can't take a whole lot from it unless they just look completely dysfunctional. And gotta hand it to them, they pulled it off. The big worry to me is John Brantley. I mean, that's the one person that you're thinking about the most heading this game, because the quarterback's the most important position. And again, he looked just like he did last year. You hear all this stuff throughout spring practice about how John Brantley's more comfortable in the pro-style offense, like, yada, yada, yada. If that's more comfortable, then I need the board to redefine
it. Right. I completely agree. Chang, you got one thing?
Yeah, well, obviously the offense is still an issue, like Mike said. But also I saw that the front seven played really well. I mean, I don't know if it's a product of the offensive line being very thin and very hurt. But a lot of people have been saying that the front seven is going to be the strength of this team with Floyd, Powell, and Easley. And they look good in the scrimmage, so I guess we can take what we want from that. But it's hard to tell, really, just in this one scrimmage.
Right. The thing is, it's the opposite of the Brantley thing. People have been saying that they looked good, and they didn't look bad.
Yeah.
You know, like, they did look good. So I'd say that's a fair thing to take from it. But to be fair, I think the three of us right now, if we lined up in three-down lineman set with no Buck, we could probably get some pressure on Brantley.
I'd get a good lick on Brantley.
You wish. I'd say the one thing for me was actually just that the offensive line is awful. And I mean, injuries were obviously a factor. They were playing both ways. It was like 85 degrees out, so there were a lot of excuses to be had there. But then I looked, and I'm writing about this in tomorrow's paper, there is no experience on the offensive line. The guys coming back for the fall have like 15 starts. Like, the projected starters have like 15 starts among them. All of them are like injury problems. I don't see good things coming from, like, Jonathan Harrison, who they're going to be trust, you know, with all the new responsibilities of recognizing plays at the center in this new pro style offense, hasn't played center since his freshman year of high school. I don't see good things coming from the offensive line.
That's really the overlooked problem with this team coming out of last year was, you know, when I was putting together a story about everybody who's leaving, I was like, that's an awful lot of offensive linemen leaving, and the line didn't really even play that well last year. It's going to be rough.
Right.
And you know, they lost a lot of, you know, talent on the defensive line too, but that, like, the offensive line, like, really took a big hit. Mm-hmm. And it's, like, especially with Brantley being the way he is, like, for him to be a good quarterback, you got to think everything around him has to be set up just right.
Right.
You know? And with a line like that, I don't see how it would be.
And I mean, Pete, this gets overlooked, but you also have a tight end who's probably going to line up on the line pretty much, you know, pretty frequently during the season in the new offense. You have Jordan Reed, who really doesn't have that much experience at tight end. He keeps saying the biggest adjustment is him blocking, so that's not a good sign either. You pair that with a bad offensive lineman, a shaky quarterback, that's not a good thing for the offense.
And you look, and you're probably going to get Xavier Nixon back. I don't think he's hurt that badly.
Doesn't Xavier Nixon weigh like 270 pounds or like something really troubling?
I mean, he's not awesome, but he's a lot better than Chaz Green, like, for example, on Saturday. Nick Alajajan, I think, will be fine. And then Matt Passion's the other guy who, I mean, is he ever going to play football? I don't know.
Right.
I'm not ripping on him. Like, he just has really bad luck with injuries. And at a certain point, it stops just being bad things happening to you and starts being you're just an injury-prone player.
Right.
You may never see the field. So that's another thing to worry about.
And who else are you looking at? The guard spots, it's what, Silberman, who they just moved in from tackle, James Wilson, mm-hmm. another injury problem.
Don't start with me on that.
That's
a touchy subject. John Jalapio. I mean, everybody talked him up during the spring, and he probably looked the least bad out of all of them on Saturday, however you want to put
that's
that.
High praise.
Yeah.
And then Harrison at center, which, I mean, he looks good. Everybody says good things about him, and he's a big guy. I was very surprised by how big he was.
He's a very large human being.
So, I mean, maybe that works out well, but either, you know, he's can't be a worse snapper than Pouncey. So
yeah, it was really funny to me. Brantley, everybody talked about how comfortable he is in the new system. And he starts 0-for-6. His first completion comes on a play that looked exactly like last year. He's in the shotgun, four wide receivers. Snap hits the grass. He picks it up and finds Jordan Reed. Like, it was like exactly straight out of the 2010 season.
Right. It was like Adazio rang that one
yeah,
in.
Yeah, exactly.
That is something I actually wanted to talk about, just in sort of broad, you know, big picture orange and blue game stuff. Did that offense look any different? Could you look out there and be like, oh, yeah, this is totally different. This is it, you know?
There was one time that Chris Rainey, I want to say maybe like the second drive, took a handoff deep in the backfield, made a cut around a linebacker, bounced outside in between a couple linemen, then bounced to the outside of the sideline, got like 15 yards or right. something. I was like, ah,
yeah,
that's a little different. That was cool. Other than that, no, not really.
Right.
You can, and I don't know that really it should have, because it's, look, in a couple weeks, there's no way they were going to pick up these schemes on offense and defense. Certainly no way they were going to be good enough to run them, like, you know, full out in a spring game. You'd still like to see something a little bit different, but I don't know, and this is something I'd like to get to at some point on this podcast, is like, what were they going to do in this game? Like, should they really even have had this game? Because it's kind of a no-win situation.
Mm-hmm. That's the argument I made, is that it's like, who cares at this point? You know, like, either they're going to come out and they're going to fall flat on their faces, which you could argue the offense completely did, or they're going to come out, they're going to look a lot like last year and be what? Good at best? Average? Realistically? What are they, like you said, what do they have to win? Who are they going to impress? The fans who are looking for this, you know, 180-degree turn, they didn't get it themselves. Like, who wins?
And all the players were saying that they didn't really show anything.
Right.
All of them were this vanilla defense, a vanilla look. Like, Ron Powell said he didn't play the buck position, which is the position that they've been talking about this whole offseason. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you can't really take much from this game.
If your goal is to, like, get better as a team, which we're always talking about, then, like, why not run what you're actually going to run and do it in private? I mean, that was right. The philosophy that they took for the whole spring. Like, why not keep that for the last scrimmage of the spring, which is all this is? And if your goal is to entertain the fans, then for the love of God, entertain the fans. Don't do what you did on Saturday.
Mission failed. Yeah.
We've talked about this a lot in the past. It's like, you know, can't you have, like, a skills competition, have, like, some trick shot throws with
right.
quarterbacks, which I maybe you don't want to do that. You know, you can have, like, races and, you know, kick, like, have Sturgis
yeah.
try, like, a 70-yard field goal.
Just make it fun. Make
yeah.
it entertaining. Do something different. Like, do 7-on-7s for all I care,
yeah.
you know? Like, I don't need to
yeah.
see a bad offensive line go out there. Like, do the circle of life drill. Do something that people are going to get excited and fired up about, because an announced crowd of 53,000 showed up, which was BS. That had
right,
to be maybe
absolutely.
40,000.
Yeah.
And they showed up not, you know, they showed up wanting to see something different. They wanted to see Florida football, first of all, but they wanted to see something different. And they got something that was largely the same and completely depressing.
From the outside, I guess we're saying it's useless from the outsider's point of view. But from the inside, do you think this scrimmage helps them running this, like, a simulated game? Like,
no, because there was nothing simulated game about that. They scored the first points of the game on a fifth down field goal, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that wasn't realistic. Like, the offensive linemen were playing three, you know, two different ways. The secondary was largely the same for both the first and second team.
Because they have no depth at all.
Right, exactly, yeah. That's the thing. Is that
crowd noise was not a part
yeah.
of it.
Yeah, and the crowd wasn't even up on the field because it was all sunny and whatnot. They were all hiding behind, like, hiding
yeah.
in the shade at first. I don't see what the team gained other than actually playing a game.
All they did was open themselves up to criticism, really. And some of it is probably not deserved, but the thing I keep coming back to is that with Brantley, like, there's no evidence for him to be good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we hear about how he's good in practice, but we heard about how he was good in practice for 2 years before last season when he was absolutely not good. And no matter how bad you think Steve Adazio is play-calling-wise, like, you drop somebody in there with the wrong play, every once in a while, they're still going to make a good throw, make a good read.
Yeah.
And you can count that on one hand, if that, with Brantley last year. So
yeah.
I don't like. And then this, he just showed absolutely no pickup this year from last year. He looked like the exact same guy.
Yeah,
if we had to make a case for Brantley as being a good quarterback in front of a jury, there'd be absolutely no evidence.
No, yeah.
It'd be almost impossible. What would you say? There's stats? There's no stats. There's no visual
experience.
Evidence. There's nothing. So, I mean, I think that's it right there. Like, there's nothing you can say that really can give fans any hope with this guy until he actually does it on a consistent basis.
That was the argument Tyler made today in his column. It's like, Brantley's one backing point is his experience, but his only experience is being a bad quarterback.
Yeah.
It's like, you're going to trot that out there? Like, nobody's buying that. So
nobody knows how to finish 7-5, whatever they did last year.
Yeah.
Like John Brantley.
Right, that's the thing, is that you're assuming Tyler Murphy and all these guys can only be worse. They can only know how to finish 6-6. You know, they can't be any. I don't understand that move. So let's actually talk about that. What did you see from Tyler Murphy and Jeff Driskel? And should that spot be, you know, tightly contested come fall?
I mean, they were fine. They weren't bad, but I don't think they were good enough to overtake Brantley, at least on this scrimmage. I don't know what they've seen in practices. Apparently, Brantley is completing passes at a 70% clip in practice, which I don't know if I believe that, but they were fine. Like, Tyler Murphy threw a touchdown, obviously, also threw an interception, but they weren't good enough to overtake Brantley, I don't think.
Okay.
It's that 70% counts warm up.
It's got to.
Yeah, that's how he really boosted that percentage.
And unguarded, unguarded receivers.
Murphy and Driskel, like, I don't really know how to rate them because the only way that I rated Brantley was looking at the Brantley that I knew, looking at that Brantley, saying they're the same, and saying the Brantley that I know is not good, and this is the same Brantley, therefore he is still not good.
Right.
Murphy and Driskel, I have nothing to go off of, and because it was a spring game, it was really like helter skelter, it's kind of hard for me to rate them, but at the same time, if you're Murphy and Driskel and all these coaches, and by all these coaches I just mean Will Muschamp because we don't talk to any of them. Will Muschamp, he's coming out and saying Brantley's ahead, Brantley's far ahead, he's the starter, he'd be the starter today, then they can't be that good. You know?
That's true. But they looked better to me.
Yeah, sure.
It's like you said, it doesn't really matter because it was a spring game and it was all crap and you're playing with a walk-on defensive back as your running back. None of that really matters. But just purely like athletically and like ability to roll out of the pocket, stand in the pocket, throw the football.
They're gonna have to roll out of the pocket a lot. that's definitely a good thing. I mean, I don't see how Brantley's gonna keep a grip on the starting job for the full season. Like, it just doesn't seem possible to me right now because he's not gonna do anything to give them a chance to win. There's no reason to think that at this point. And if things turn south halfway through the season, like, why not let Driskel get some of his mistakes out of the way now?
Yeah. That's the argument I'd make. And if Tyler Murphy looks good, which people are really high on Tyler Murphy right now, give him a shot. You know, throw him in there. And it's like Muschamp said, they will have a role in the offense come fall pretty much no matter what.
Right.
Which is just to say, like, you saw what Brantley did last year. We're going to have somebody back there.
And, you know, Jacoby Brissett will get involved too when he gets here in the fall. Like,
that's true.
You know, he'll be here a little late, but I mean, he'll still have a shot maybe later on in the season.
Yeah. I mean, you never know, but
this quarterback.
That was going to be a really interesting year. And another thing I thought about this game is this was probably, I think this was the 30th game I watched in the Swamp, if you count spring, or that I've covered in the Swamp, if you count spring games. So I guess 37th game that I've watched in the Swamp.
Wow.
That was probably the single most depressing. Huh. South Carolina last year is definitely up there. That's probably.
Oh, Mississippi State.
Yeah, but see, all those games, like, you know, they had a chance to. Well, actually, no, I'm sorry, not Mississippi State.
They ran the ball like 30 straight times.
you have, in the middle of the season, you have a chance for redemption coming soon. You know, this one was just like, I'm just looking at the months ahead and thinking like, wow, like that's it, huh? Like that's the 2011 Florida football team. Like that's what this is going to look like? And you think back to like 2006, even 2007, 2008, 2009, like, what happened there? Like,
even last year, there was so much hope. It's like Trey Burton looked good.
And you kept thinking, like, sometime this season, like, they'll flip the switch and turn it around. And now you see that on Saturday, and it's like, how are they going to flip? Like, I don't know how they're going to do it. It's just setting you up for a whole season of disappointment, you know? And it's so far off, there's, like, there's nothing to turn it around in, like, a week. There's no Appalachian State coming up next week, you know?
That's true. I was going to point to 07 Auburn. That was when I was a student in the crowd. That game
was
pretty
depressing. That game too.
But you had
It was a good game. It was a pretty good game though. Like came onto that last field goal.
That's true.
I guess I just look at it in the context of like they had another game the next week, you know, and they had a guy in the race for the Heisman Trophy.
That's
like,
true.
There was
always a bright side
to be excited about in the future. This game more than anything proved to me that there's nothing to be excited about in the future for this season. I mean, Dominique Easley, Sharif Floyd looked awesome, like really good, and I think they're going to be. I think they could be awesome.
Yeah.
And Ronald Powell, I still think, is a freak, so he always has a chance to be awesome. But it doesn't matter.
Right.
It doesn't matter.
You can't score points. It doesn't matter.
Could next year's team be worse than last year's team?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And I think the schedule is a lot tougher this year,
that's
too.
True.
So.
But, like, talent-wise, like, it's essentially the same team, though. Like, 10 of 11 receivers are the same. Mm-hmm. Same terrible quarterback. Running backs are the same, but a year older. Terrible offensive line.
It's players that were recruited to run a different style of offense and defense. They're going to have to switch that. Under new coaches who may be pretty capable, but Will Muschamp is definitely not Urban Meyer, and neither is Charlie Weiss. Both of them together are not Urban Meyer.
Right.
So.
But I think people are like, it's really unfair to think that this team is going to be any better than the last year's. Like, even from the before this scrimmage, it really is unfair. They've lost a lot of guys, like you said, on the offensive line. They basically have the same playmakers. They really don't have a playmaker at the wide receiver position. That Frankie Hammond, who last year was probably the third receiver on this team, and right now he's number one on the depth chart. And the defense, you lost your leading tackler,
Ahmad Black.
Your Norris Jenkins is missing all spring. Your defense line is going to be full of freshmen. And you play Auburn, Alabama, LSU. Like, it's really unfair to think this team is going to be any better.
You're playing the worst. Like, the SEC schedule is always tough, but you're playing the worst three you could possibly draw from the West in a given year. But as far as the I actually feel okay about the receivers. I think that the receivers are going to be used this year the way that they should have been used last year, the way everybody wanted them to, so it should be an improvement there.
Mm-hmm.
And I like Quentin Dunbar. Like, he seems cool. He seems like a fun toy to have, right? He's what Deontay Thompson was supposed to be, a deep threat,
right,
and might actually catch the ball. And then, you know, Frankie Hammond's pretty consistent. Amarius Hines, hopefully they use him in a really versatile manner like he's supposed to be used.
Did he play Saturday?
I bet he didn't do anything.
Hines? No, I didn't see him either.
I thought he was on the field. Check the participation report.
The thing is, I don't see any number one wide receiver. And I think in Weiss's offense, in a pro-style offense, you need that dominant wide receiver. And surrounded by, a bunch of okay guys. But they don't really have that dominant,
just the guy you can go to.
AJ Green, wide receiver, or anything like that, which I think is a problem for the offense.
Right. I mean, at the same time, if you had a ton of, super talented guys, then you could just spread it out and give it to all those guys. I don't know if any of these guys are quite that good. I'm with Mike that I'm a little higher on the receiving corps because I think even a guy like Stephen Ali is going to be really good. Like you said, Dunbar, Hammond, Hines,
DeBose.
The thing I've been hearing that I heard that last offseason too. I heard Quinn Dunbar was really impressive as a freshman. I heard Frankie Hammond was good. I heard that Omarius Hines was tearing it up. And I don't know if it was a part of the quarterback, but until I see them doing consistently, I really don't believe it.
A lot of them were handicapped by Steve Adazio and the play calling and the way that they were substituted or just not played sometimes. When they were in there, I thought they were all pretty impressive. When they actually got a chance to make a play, they did a good job. The problem with this season is, I don't know who's going to get them the ball, so it doesn't really matter how good they are.
Right. That's the thing is that it's sort of a really cyclical bad argument that all the quarterback has to do is get the ball to the playmakers, but the playmakers need somebody to get on the ball. It's something A has to connect to B at some point in here, and nobody has shown the potential to do that.
Right. But I think I do agree that Brantley is bad, but I think all of the blame is going to Brantley. But what happens if he had a really, really good wide receiver? Do you think that would make him better? Like you said, it works both ways. Like, A has to get the ball to B, but B has to catch the ball from A. And wide receivers were okay. Frankie Hammond is solid, but he's no great wide receiver.
He's not dealing with a Biletnikoff award out there on the outside. No. That's for sure. And look, Brantley has been in a terrible situation the whole time. I've said this many times. He had a pretty rough go of it last year with a bad offensive coordinator, a center who couldn't really get him the ball, not really any experienced playmakers, Deontay, who dropped a reverse on Saturday.
That was awesome.
Yeah,
come on.
He's really showing us how diverse of a dropper he can be.
Yeah.
That was some next-level dropping.
The confines of the receiver position don't really hold him back. If he was a running back, he could have bad hands there, too.
Nothing with Brantley is, set up for success, really, but he's also
not
either.
No.
So,
It's just bad all around.
Really? What a terrible situation for this team.
I'm really sorry to you guys out there. It's going to be a rough year, I think. And I'm sorry we can't really give you much positive to think about right now.
Here's the question, though. And this is what fans are going to say, and this is how a lot of it was spun. Can we take Saturday's game as any sort of realistic shot? Could they have been better if everything had gone their way? If the injuries hadn't been there, would they have looked better? And so is it fair to make this judgment?
The main judgment I'm making is with Brantley, and I feel very confident in saying that he has not really improved much from last year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big problem for the season, so that's the main thing that I take from it.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with Mike. I don't think you can maybe assess everything based on this game because, again, they just got a new defensive system, a new offensive system. They had 6-7 weeks pretty much to learn it. So, but I think you can assess Brantley pretty well, and he hasn't really shown anything. So I think you can pretty much take out of it that he's not going to be good at all at any point.
I'd agree with that 100%, but I think there is some chance that the offense could be a little better. They're not going to score no points the entire year.
I mean, look, you got Jeff Demps was out, Andre DeBose was out, Mike Blakely, Mike Gillisley, Mac Brown. That's a lot of talent. Their offense was not playing in that game.
And I think Demps is arguably their top playmaker. Like, when he was in last year, the first three games, when he wasn't hurt, he was rushing for 150, 160 yards. I'm not saying he can do that every game, but if he's healthy, he can be that guy that you carry, yeah, that carries you, you know?
Jeff Demps is awesome. The problem is, like, I don't know about the line. Like, these guys are going to have their work cut out for them out of the backfield, but they do have playmakers. Like, there's talent on this team, and Charlie Weiss is a, by his track record, a good offensive coordinator, should be able to make something of them. I just think it's really hard to work around having, like, a quarterback who isn't functional. And this isn't like, you know, we're not talking about 2007 LSU where there's, like, a world-class defense to cover up for Matt Flynn, you know? Like,
yeah.
Like, we're talking about a team that's going to have to – John Brantley's going to have to throw the ball for this team to win. And I have never seen him do that, so I don't know how to – I don't know how to think that he'll be able to do it this year.
At this point, like, Brantley's not even a game manager. Like, he's a game loser at this, you know? Like, you're...
Right.
He's not doing anything.
Yeah. You can't... I mean, you can have him hand the ball off, but you can't have him, like, just pick up 6 yards on, like, second and 10 to get a manageable third down. You know, like, I don't even trust him to do that, really. Like,
I even think some of the players have lost confidence in him. Like, I saw in Tyler's article and column today, he said that Robert Clark said that he likes Tyler Murphy the best out of all of them.
Really?
Which is,
have some honesty.
Yeah, that was a fun quote. And Tyler said he asked him basically, like, what do you think of all three quarterbacks? And Clark didn't hesitate. He's like, Tyler Murphy, I like him the best. Like, it wasn't asked, like, how do you like Tyler Murphy? It was all quarterbacks. And, like, people are thinking this way. And I don't know if it's the younger guys. Like, some of those receivers are younger, probably closer to Tyler Murphy's group. And they're probably tired of seeing Brantley go out there and, you know, struggle as bad as he is. They probably want something new as well. So
here's the other thing that's scary to me is this question got asked to Muschamp, Brantley, and just about every single other player who came in the room for interviews was, did the John Brantley we saw on Saturday match up with the John Brantley we saw throughout spring practice? Because if so, we all know with our eyes John Brantley was not good on Saturday. We've been hearing all throughout the spring that he's been great in practice. So if those are the same person, then we know that everything they said about him being good is not true.
Right.
They all said he looked exactly the same. And Stephen Alley was my favorite because I asked him that question. He goes, oh, no, he's very consistent. Like, he's a senior. He is very consistent. Like, he always looks the same. You know what you're getting out of John Brantley? I was like, wow, man. You guys are screwed.
He's consistently bad.
All right, yeah. What more could you ask for? Yeah.
And they're not going to throw him under the bus, but, like, with that question, like, this is the thing that these guys don't understand when it comes to answering questions in the media. It's like, saying that John Brantley, like, had a rough day on Saturday backs him up, really.
Right.
You know, but they think that's a huge insult to say that. Just like they think saying someone's made a big improvement is an insult because it means that at one point they were not the best player in the history of football. So, but none of them said that. No one would say, like, yeah, today was a little bit of a down day for Johnny. Like, he looked better than that. They all said he looked the same, and they think that's good, and that's kind of terrifying.
Absolutely terrifying.
Let me ask you guys a question.
Oh.
If this offense looked exactly the same, and it looks exactly the same this year, how much of the last year's offensive struggles were Adazio's fault?
Ooh.
Was he really that bad, or did Temple get a good head coach?
I think any public opinion like this is going to be over-exaggerated. So Steve Adazio is not as bad as he was made out to be. But he was still
bad. He's not Satan.
Yeah. He still did a lot of stupid stuff, and he, you know, did his best to come off as incompetent in any meeting with the media, which is the only time he gets to discuss his job with the public.
Right.
And so, I mean, I don't know. It's certainly not all his fault. He didn't, you know, have a whole lot to work with.
That genius did also run the ball 30 straight times last year against Mississippi State. Like, he's certainly not blameless, but, like, yeah, like, to a certain, you know, if they suck bad this year, you'll look back and be like, all right, well, Adazio had nothing to work with. I mean, nobody has anything to work with. I mean, that's the thing that's really tough about this team is that you can't say he has nothing to work with because he's got two really good running backs in the backfield, and he's got a collection of receivers who probably combine to be, like, good or above average, you know?
Solid.
Like, he's got talent. It's just, like, he's missing the one thing that makes it all go.
And the offensive line, too.
And a line, yeah. That is a competent quarterback.
People are just going to have to be patient. Like, on the way to the Orange and Blue game, I was listening to the radio, and all these fans are calling in saying, like, you know, nine wins is the benchmark for this season. Anything under that is, like, really disappointing. Anything over that is gravy. You ain't winning nine games. Like, it's not. I don't see how that's gonna happen. Like this team's not good.
All right.
Everybody needs to lower their expectations. Like, this is the point. Last year was a warm up for this, as far as I'm concerned. Like, if y'all win nine games, like, you should be ecstatic. Rush University, or something, you know. But I mean, you're looking at 7-8 wins this year, and need to be okay with that because this is a transitional year with a first time head coach and new offensive schemes. with a team that wasn't good in the first place. So, you know, right. there's just this thought out there that, like, you know, oh, the Gators are unassailable. Like, the players are all-knowing and will do everything correct all the time, unless they're restricted by some jerk like Steve Adazio. Like, nah, they're not really that good, and, like, this is going to take time to turn this around. And, you know, I kind of believe in Will Muschamp. Like,
I mean, it's nice to want to believe, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I
have no reason not to.
Yeah. You don't have a reason to or not to yet. Yeah, right. So let's just be optimistic.
Yeah, I mean, you know, clearly not something I do, but like, I respect people's right to be optimistic about him.
Yeah, so I mean, I think it'll be okay eventually, but I don't think that's going to be this year.
Right, and I mean, that's the thing, is that you have to give these guys time. Like, you have to give somebody like Charlie White's time. He's not in the NFL where you can just go out and pick up a free agent wide receiver to fit a scheme, you know? Like, you have to go out and recruit, and you have to bring in people who do fit the scheme. And it's like Mike said before, it's people who don't fit the scheme right now. And a quarterback who doesn't seem to fit any scheme.
And that's why I think, that's what I was saying, that people, I mean, I understand people are disappointed, but really they shouldn't be disappointed, because it is really unfair to expect anything different than what you saw on Saturday. That's what this team is, you know?
Except for Brantley. That's what I keep coming back to. I expected a little spark of life out of John Brantley.
Well, it goes back to the thing Kyle brought up either on the air or just talking last week, is like, when people talked about Brantley this year, it was mostly because the media was asking, like, John Brantley looking a whole lot better now, huh? And they were always like, John's John, you know, football is football. John looks more comfortable. They're not saying he looks better. They're just saying he looks more comfortable. He's not different. Even, you know, they didn't even say that. Like, all the pressure of people saying that he looks different and that he's going to be this new quarterback, that was mostly coming from the questions, I felt, just from watching.
That's true.
Because whereas last year, from what he said, and you can back this up, in the spring it was all like, John Brantley is the greatest quarterback, you know, greatest pro style passer, whatever you want. Whereas this year it was like, John's John.
When Tebow was here, people would throw Brantley's name into for no reason. Like, they'd be talking about Tebow, and they'd go, oh, and John Brantley just looks amazing. Like, you know, that's how all that hype came with him being the second best quarterback in the SEC.
That's right. So, yeah. I honestly don't.
Somebody on ESPN.
Right.
Yeah, they rated, oh my God, they rated the quarterbacks in the SEC and had John Brantley like second or third when he was Tebow's backup. Like, wow.
Was that Chris Lowe?
I like to think not. Chris Lowe was kind of intelligent. So I don't know. But yeah, that's where all that came from. And yeah, Kyle's right. That was all that stuff, they just said it. Like, they wanted to say, they wanted you to know how good John Brantley was. And all this stuff now is probably a little bit forced because, like, everybody's looking for it. And they don't have a choice but to say, yeah, John Brantley's a little better.
Right. All right, we're going to come back. And like Mike said, some of us are optimists. Some of you are optimists in here. So we're going to try to look for something positive from the Orange and Blue game. Chang, you already brought up the defensive line. I think we're all kind of in agreement on that. The defensive line, specifically Easley, Floyd, and Powell, looked pretty good. They got some pressure on Brantley. Floyd took credit after the game for Brantley's struggles. He said, I wouldn't call his play struggle. I'd call it not enough room.
Yeah, that's the best quote of the day.
Absolutely, yeah.
He also came out and said, you know, after Muschamp talked about Floyd, Easley, Powell, those guys, said, you know, they're really talented, but they still have a ways to go as far as learning the game. And then somebody asked Floyd about that, and he was like, once we do that, we will be completely unstoppable.
Well, he's like, I think we can. I think we can be unstoppable. We can be like, I think we can
one
be
hell
a
of
force.
A front.
One hell of a force.
Yeah, one of the force.
And then David Jones of Florida Today was like, you can be? And Floyd was like, we will be. And I was like, oh, no. Sharif has spoken. All right, so aside from that, anything.
I challenge you guys.
Yeah, I dare you.
This may have gotten overlooked. In the first half, there was a long-standing spring game record tied. Now, looking ahead to this season, I know one of the main names you guys are worried about replacing out there is Chaz Henry.
Ooh.
And fear not, because Kyle Christie boomed a 55-yard punt in the first half, which
good
tied
call.
A
nice.
Spring game record set in 2003. So Kyle Christie, maybe something going on there with him. His other punt was 38 yards, so yeah. not too good. But, you know, he's got the leg, man. He's got the leg. He can do it. Oh, and Sturgis.
Yeah. I was going to say, Sturgis along with that.
He had field goals from 21, 43, and 33. Didn't miss any.
For both teams.
Yeah.
Including one on fifth down.
Takes a lot of talent to score for two teams.
And I have a feeling Sturgis is going to score most of the points for this team this year. So it's a good sign.
It's a good sign that he's doing well right now.
I could certainly see that.
What else? Big day for Malcolm Jones, a guy you're never going to ever see again for the rest of your life. He's a nice kid. I had to write about him. He was listed as defensive back from Fleming Island. He went out there and he ran for, I don't know, about 50-odd yards.
He also played for both teams.
Yeah.
He ran for 63 yards.
63 yards.
On 15 carries.
Yeah, a game high, 15 carries.
Yeah. So, yeah, good day for him. Also, you know, Deontay Thompson fumbled that reverse. Other than that, no fumbles. That's good. That's
right, positive. Nice. Ball security.
Yeah, well, it wasn't real sloppy, you know.
It was just bad.
Yeah, they were handicapped by not having a line and by not really having a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
But
and other than the 10 completions for Brantley, he did complete 4. So that's a good sign.
Yeah, and he did them all like pretty much on one drive. Like,
yeah.
Like he had that pass to Reed, and then he completed like 3 of his next 4 or 5. So that was, you know,
yeah,
a little spark there.
Maybe that's the John Brantley that you're going
to
see next year.
That's when they went to the shotgun too. Is when he was doing
right.
Play, you know,
when nothing looked anything like what they're probably going to run next year. Right. Unless they're just completely throwing us for a loop with all this, and they're going to run a slightly modified version of what they ran last year.
And Quentin Dunbar had what? I mean, his stats that they gave us are completely wrong because they shorted. He had a 24-yard catch that they put down as like a 5-yard catch on the box score. It was messed up.
Huh.
It was an accounting error. So he looked pretty good. And on the first play, this kind of backs up what they've been talking about him with the deep. But first play of the game, they called a fly route for him down the sideline, which they did last year in the spring game with Deontay Thompson and completed it. right? This year. Brantley underthrew Dunbar a little bit. It was good coverage and it was incomplete. And then I was really upset with Muschamp after the game. He blamed that on Dunbar.
Yeah.
A ball Dunbar should have caught. Nah, a ball Brantley should have thrown a little better.
Right.
I mean, it was still good coverage anyway. It's not like Dunbar blew away whoever was guarding him. Cody Riggs.
Cody Riggs,
Jeremy
yeah.
Brown, maybe. I don't remember. Yeah. Oh, by the way, they look pretty good.
Yeah. Cody Riggs got an interception, and they really didn't let any deep passes, which I don't know if you can credit to them, but still, they look good. They look fine.
Yeah, the thing is, to me, is that who's going to be there come fall? Like, you know Jenkins is going to be there. Did any of them, like, separate? I like Riggs, personally. I'm really high on Riggs.
Yeah.
And Jeremy Brown's one of those, like, all right, well, he hadn't done it yet. Is he going to do it?
I just think Riggs would fit better in the nickel because he's so small.
That's true.
And he, you know, most of the time the slot receiver is little speedy guy.
He played a little safety too.
Yeah, he did. So
I could see that. Like I like kind of like an Elam Riggs.
Yeah, it's not bad. Because I mean, Josh Evans is not looking like they all. Even the coaches are like they look okay.
Yeah.
You know, there's no one like standing out at the free safety spot. So
right. I'm gonna go with a deep cut for another one. AC Leonard.
Oh yeah.
Mm.
Tight end, early enrollee.
Yeah.
He's it's a guy that should be going to prom right now, as everyone in the history of ever said on Saturday. So, I mean, he looks pretty good. I think if they line up in a lot of two tight end sets, you could see Jordan Reed and A.C. Leonard, and those are two pretty good pass-catching options.
Leonard's one of those guys I can't tell if he's ready yet, but it was good to see him in person and back up some of the hype that is surrounding him. I think he's going to be a very good player. I don't know if that's this year, but, it might be rushing him a little bit. But I do think, you know, it was a certainly promising start for him.
Right. And I think... I don't like. Did Gerald Christian play?
I was
right?
upset about that. He played. Who, by the way, Omarius Hines did play, as we mentioned earlier, just for the orange team, not the blue team, as I would have expected.
Huh?
Because of Dunbar. Dunbar beasted his way to the top of the depth chart.
Right.
So, who were we just talking about? Gerald Christian. Yeah, because of depth issues and injuries on offense, he had to play. He started out like fullback, tight end, and then I never really looked to see if he played much linebacker, but I don't think he did.
Right. We can see.
They played a lot of nickel with two linebackers early, and that was disappointing because I really wanted to see how Gerald Christian would look on defense.
Right. Well, Gerald Christian got a tackle.
Okay. Was it solo?
Yes.
It was solo. Good work for sure.
Nice.
Yeah, so although, to
could've
be fair,
special teams also.
There were a whopping 2 assisted tackles for the orange team and 4 for the blue team,
yeah.
So I'm not sure they were too detailed on there.
The counting was rough in this game, like I said. The stats, after the game, we're going through the box score, and we're like, wait, did this guy make this play? And then, oh, that's not in the stats. So really, really rough numbers out of this. I am fairly confident, though, that John Brantley's numbers are accurate. So.
Right. Those were kept meticulously.
Yeah.
For everybody's sake.
Unfortunately.
Also, big props to Christian Provancha.
Yeah.
Walk-on quarterback at a Cocoa Beach.
Provolone,
apparently, as he's known. He threw... one of 2 touchdowns in the game. The other one was Tyler Murphy, who you can take your own conclusions. He looked all right. But Christian Provancha, a guy you're never going to hear from again unless you want to go watch the YouTube video of him playing 1,000 Miles by Vanessa Carlton on the piano.
Really?
Yeah, that exists.
Wow.
it's from the Outback Bowl. It's him tickling the ivories, Jeff Demps and like Brandon Antoine singing. And it's great because you can tell that they don't know the words to 1,000 Miles, but like they know how it goes. So like they're trying to sing along in the same sense of like, you and I would sing along to, like, Dancing Queen. You're like, we don't know the words, but we can kind of get the rhythm.
This
you know?
Is amazing.
Yeah. I linked to it on Twitter the other day.
Okay.
Actually, at the game, because I was so excited for him to be in the game. I was like, I can finally use this. This is relevant. So, I have to, yeah. Big day for Christian Pavancic.
My favorite is born.
Right. Yeah, so I hope, you know, that was nice. And same goes for all those guys who did that. Him, Malcolm Jones, Ben Sam scored a touchdown. He said he could die happy after he scored a touchdown in the Orange and Blue debut. Which, you know, I like a guy who can
respect that.
Yeah, I like having that simple of goals, you know?
We all have different goals.
Some people just want to score a touchdown in the Orange and Blue debut before they die. So good for Ben Sam. Anybody else got anything else in the Orange and Blue game? I'm content to. I wrote five stories on Saturday. I'm content to never speak of it again.
Yeah, we should probably talk about the statue unveiling just a little bit.
Yeah.
Good call. The biggest moment of the day, actually, we forgot, was Tebow walking in.
Right.
Tebow walked in through the south end zone with Werfel, I think, right? That's who he was growing up with. And John Brantley pass fell characteristically incomplete, bounced into Tebow's hands. Crowd went absolutely insane, and Tebow just flicked it back like 40 yards to the line of scrimmage, and everybody got a little sad, but then cheered really loud at the same time. So that was the best moment of the day, pretty much by everyone's standards. And then at halftime, they unveiled the Heisman Trophy statues of Tebow, Spurrier, and Werfel. Spurrier made an appearance via video, in which he was wearing South Carolina clothes with a South Carolina background, which was awesome.
That was awesome.
Werfel was there. Tebow was there. God was thanked. Fans were praised.
It went down just how you thought it
would. Exactly.
He did. Tebow did get cut off, though. He looked like he was about to talk more, and then the PA guy came. Because there was, you know, he can't get more than, like, eight words out without ruckus applause, and everybody goes nuts, and the PA guy's like, ladies and gentlemen, Jordan Tebow. He's still holding the microphone like he was going to talk, so... Huh. Oops.
Yeah. So listen, I'm sorry you had to see all this out here today. I play on Sundays, maybe, if there's an NFL.
The funny thing about the statues, and Tebow got asked about this, was Werfel and Spurrier's statues are throwing, and Tebow's is running.
Right.
In a running pose.
It's awesome.
Yeah, that is awesome. Tebow just kind of laughed it off. That is really funny to me.
I enjoyed that.
But it's not really an insult. He's a great runner. That was his thing. It's just funny.
Right. Isn't that, that's how people are going to remember him to a certain extent, is running over people.
Just for a school that went so far out of their way to try and prove that, like, he was a great passer and had no problems when all that debate was going on, and then they put him in a running pose. You know, I don't know.
Clearly the sculptor did not agree with the University Athletic Association's view of Tebow. So, yeah, that was definitely a pretty – actually, I don't know if you all saw or if I sent you this, the St. Pete Times headline. Mm-hmm. The St. Pete Times story of the game was Florida Gators unveil Heisman statues, comma, play spring game.
Nice.
The whole story was about, like, the statue unveiling. So then, like, I felt like such a tool for having cared so much and done so much work about that stupid game. And then in the same feet, the paper of record had it as play spring game.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, that was what happened Saturday.
I mean, maybe in the grand scheme of things, that's how we should look at spring games. It was like, we didn't care about any of the scrimmages throughout spring practice. I mean,
right.
We couldn't see them, but it wasn't like, nobody was freaking out about it. And that's all the Orange and Blue game is. They're just doing it in the swamp in front of people.
Right. That was actually a question I wanted to touch on, though, is did that matter more because we hadn't seen anything? Like, if we had seen John Brantley complete 70% of his passes or whatever?
That's the risk they ran by having closed practices, because now there's a way more intense focus on that one game, which is one game is never a fair, you know, representation of everything. That's why that question about whether or not Brantley looked different on Saturday was so important.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it definitely exaggerates things. It makes everyone think, okay, that's how they looked all spring. When it probably isn't. I mean, I'm sure some nice things happened in practice. And I'm sure, the offense looked a little bit more creative than what we saw. But, yeah, I mean.
Yeah, that's the only thing we have to base the spring on. So,
yeah, how
it's really,
And honestly, like, it's not going to happen. But if that could reduce expectations a lot, it'd be a good thing for Muschamp, because – like, expectations will not get lower around here. I don't know what it would take, but if they were, they need to be, basically. And if that does it, then good for Will Muschamp.
Mm-hmm. You showed them.
Yeah.
Way to suck in that game.
Yeah.
They don't expect anything out of you.
And it is pretty unfair to kind of base everything on it, even though we have to, because it is a one-game sample size. And for some players, it was a half of a football sample size.
Yeah.
And it's really, like, pretty useless, this whole thing. So.
Right. All right, let's move on then, and we're going to talk something unexpected today. We're going to talk Florida basketball, because there's a little off-season news going down. Happened early Sunday morning / late Saturday night. Freshman center Cody Larson and sophomore forward Eric Murphy were arrested in St. Augustine and charged with burglary. for breaking into a car, although they did not actually steal anything. News was broken by one of the TV stations in Jacksonville. News4jax.com is the website. Had the police report. We'll have a story about it tomorrow with the whole thing. Basically, Murphy and Larson were there. They were in a bar called Scarlett O'Hara's. They apparently asked for a wallet, claiming it was theirs. They didn't get it, so they were all up in the face of the person who was counting money for the night. They were asked to leave the bar. They did. They went out. They broke into a car, didn't take anything. And then, according to, I think, the Gainesville Sun, the Orlando Sentinel have it right now, some sergeant who was on the scene said that they fled the scene, and then they caught up with the third party, who was like the lookout for him, I guess, the head manager of the basketball team, Josh Adell. And then they caught Adell, and Adell had to call those two, and they came back to the police car. They were booked, and they got out on $5,000 bond on Sunday at 4 a.m. So that's basically the situation. Really, it would just be another athlete arrest, except for the fact that Cody Larson kind of does have a history. He came to Florida after the whole prescription drug incident, in which he was given, I think, 2 years probation. And if he got arrested again, he's going to have to serve 120 days in jail. Mm. So you got to think that if this goes through and he does end up getting arrested, he's got to be off the team, because by the time the 4 months of jail time's over, it'd be what? Let's say it starts in May, September, you'd be approaching up on practice time.
Yeah.
So, you'll miss all the summer conditioning and whatnot. Plus, is Billy Donovan going to want to keep a guy who's been in jail for 4 months on his team?
There's just so many options with the law, like with things getting deferred and reduced and yada, yada, yada. Like, it's kind of hard to say what would happen with Larson, but it certainly does not help his career. It's funny because, like, when a football player gets arrested, I can usually, or at least when Urban was here, usually kind of figure out how it was going to go. You know, three or four ways that Meyer would handle it. I really don't know with Donovan because we haven't seen this.
Last time was 2007, I think.
Was that Brandon Powell?
Yeah, and he
Powell and
left.
Brandon James buying weed.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, from a police informant. Oops. And, you know, my question in this situation is the same as it was in that one. In that situation, James and Powell couldn't get somebody to buy weed for him? Like, really, you're athletes in Florida. In this case, where were the boosters? Why are Eric Murphy's pockets light?
Right.
You know? He shouldn't be hurting for money.
You guys
got to get on it. This guy could be important next year.
Right.
Losing a lot of depth.
He's going to be a starting power forward.
Yeah.
Cody Larson's going to be a backup center.
That's an indictment on the UF basketball program right there.
It really is. I mean, it's basketball school, my foot. You're not giving these guys money to keep happy in the offseason.
Right. I don't understand, and nobody has reported this so far. What the hell were they doing in St. Augustine?
Yeah,
like a 20 and 19-year-old hanging out at a St. Augustine bar. You can't go get liquored up in Gainesville? I know for a fact they can get liquored up in Gainesville.
Yeah, and none of them are from there.
No, they're both out of state.
They may have been visiting somebody else. I don't know.
My roommate's
not from St. Augustine. He was there. Your roommate, too. Brett was there this weekend.
That's true.
Visiting the girl.
That's
girlfriend.
True.
So, who knows, man?
Were they intoxicated at the time?
Funny thing is that the sergeant said that, like, they weren't drunk, but you could tell they'd had a couple drinks. My favorite thing about this coming from a police sergeant is that they're both underage, and it's like, hey, sir, you have the power to do something about this. They're underage, and they're drinking in St. Augustine, and they're breaking into cars.
Wow.
You should maybe look into that a little bit. So I'm a little curious about the whole thing is just really messed up to me, because what were they doing there? Why were they trying to take money? What were they trying to do at 2 a.m. in St. Augustine with cash? Mm-hmm. Why didn't they take anything when they broke into the car? That just seems like a waste of time. Yeah, I don't. The whole thing is just, none of it makes any sense to me.
Yeah, you're dealing with an area down there around, I'm assuming it's down around St. George Street, like downtown St. Augustine. You don't have a whole lot of, I mean, real minor problems there. Now, a stone's throw away, you have some big problems in some neighborhoods in St. Augustine. So I don't really know, you know, what kind of, how seasoned they are at dealing with this kind of stuff, the beat cop in that area.
Right.
Or handled this, so I don't know.
The whole situation just screams like, and it's going to have to be dealt with. Billy Donovan had a statement earlier where both players are now, kind of buried the lead here, both players are suspended from basketball activities right now, so they can't be doing anything. But, I mean, it's going to come down to when more information comes out and they can make a decision.
Yeah.
Personally, I think Larson's gone, and I think Murphy, it depends on what, because obviously we've been reading today, there are rumors that Eric Murphy might transfer or whatnot. I think Eric Murphy would have too much playing time to transfer, but if this becomes a bigger issue,
right,
I could see him being gone.
Yeah, that's where this is really a story to me. You know, otherwise, it's so far away from the season. If you're going to get arrested, do it now. Knock that out, get it out of the way. And, you know, maybe Donovan punishes him through weightlifting and running, which he needs. So,
that's what I was wondering.
Yeah.
Is that
going to end up being a good thing? You could look back on this as the turning point.
That'll be a great story.
Yeah,
and this could be very bad for the basketball team next year, because if they lose Larson and Murphy, they're gonna have Patrick Young on the front court. And Pitchford, what's his name? Pitchford.
How dare you hate on Will Pitchford?
Walter Pitchford is their back, like the other front court guy. There's nobody else really.
Walter Pitchford sounds like a great Amish guy. He'd be an awesome Amish guy.
He really
would. But yeah, like Walter Pitchford's a freshman who's like 6'11", like 220, like he's real lanky. Patrick Young is going to have to learn to play 40 minutes a game. Will you get is going to get a lot of minutes if this goes, you know, if this goes south.
What's that team assistant thinking, letting their only front court players
head manager there? People.
Like, man, it's just stupidity. Kids making mistakes, you know.
That was what the sergeant said. Like, kids making dumb mistakes. I was like, all right.
This stuff happens all the time. It's not that big of a deal in the grand scheme of things, but it could. For two players who are already on a little bit tenuous ground, it's at a position they really need players at. It's a problem.
And for Larson, right, who's under probation.
Yeah,
like,
the legal implications for him are really concerning. So we'll see how that plays out. I don't expect anything to really go down for another week or so unless, God forbid, the media do something and a story is broken and people find out what was really happening that night. But until then, if we do any more podcasts past next week, we will keep you updated. All right, we don't really have a topic for the old intro to sports journalism segment, as we haven't for the last couple weeks, haven't been getting the emails with questions to discuss. So we do want to give a shout-out to our boy Vince Faniola, a.k.a. Cookie Smith, who sent in a couple of emails. Always good to hear from him. Always good to hear from all of the listeners who get us feedback at podcast@alligator.org. So we're going to move on straight to our weekly awards, our Major Right Awards for Excellence in the Field of Sport in Wandy Pierre-Louis Bad Angles of the Week. One good thing, one bad thing, most often from the world of sports in the last week. And since I firmly believe in ending on a bad note, we'll start with the majors, and we will start with me. I'm going to give mine to the fact that the Orange and Blue debut, and therefore spring football, is over. I don't have to worry about that anymore. That was really bogging me down for the last couple weeks. We're very close to graduation, Chang and I. Mike's already out. Mike's free.
On the outside.
Chang and I are...
I can see the light.
Right, exactly. That's what I'm looking for right now. When we were bogged down in spring football, I couldn't see the light. Yeah. All I could see was the dingy visitor's locker room. That was really clouding me down. I had to worry about that. I couldn't worry about all final projects and exams and getting out and moving out and graduating and all these important things that I should probably be worrying about in the next month. Now that spring football's over, I feel like I can breathe again. Had Eric Murphy and Cody Larson not got arrested last night, would have been a very easy night, and I think we would have had a very easy week. But still... the end is near. I can see the light, as Chang said.
Feels so good.
Props to that for just being over. What do you got? All
right, I'm giving my major to Ronald Powell, who finally gave some personality to the football team. He was made available to the media last week, Tuesday or Wednesday. I don't know. I forget what day.
I think Monday.
It was Monday?
Maybe.
Yeah. Last Monday. And he was just awesome. He was like doing a stand-up routine up there. He criticized Michael McCall for his shirt, his choice of a shirt color.
I believe it was turquoise.
You want to go with the rundown?
Yeah.
Okay. So he called John Jalapio cuddly at one point, and I said, "Are you saying you've cuddled with John Jalapio?" And he goes, "Man, how are you gonna ask me if I cuddle with John Jalapio? Look at you." You're wearing a turquoise shirt, which I was, and it looks lovely on me. I'm not even going to lie.
It brings out your eyes.
Yeah, exactly. I look great in turquoise. Really makes me pop. So then a few minutes later, somebody asked him if he's seen Jeff Driscoll's pinkies because they appear to be broken. Like, he has, like, messed up looking pinkies. And he goes, I don't go around looking at people's pinkies. He's like, ask that man over there. And he pointed at me. I was like, don't ever let me catch you wearing a turquoise shirt because you'll never hear the end of it.
Don't try to justify the pinky question as normal, though. That was really awkward for all parties involved.
It was a little weird.
It had to be asked, apparently, because that person was working on a story about Jeff Driscoll. But, man, like, you can't bring up, like, you ever seen Jeff Driscoll's pinkies? Like, if anybody asked me that, I'd get a little weirded out. I'd turn to make fun of the nearest person wearing a loud shirt that I could. I don't know.
And there was also a question that a reporter asked. He's like, well, how did it feel like with Mike Pouncey, you know, riding up your butt all last year?
Yeah.
Like, there were some weird questions thrown at him, to be fair.
Powell's response to the riding your butt comment was, whoa, next question, which I loved. I love the fact that really all there was is that somebody just, like, called us out for all our retarded stuff, you know? Like, because the same guy who asked the riding your butt question asked the same question twice, basically, and the guy was like, you already asked me that. I was like, thank God. Somebody did it.
Yeah.
And then he called out another reporter for being nervous,
because
the guy started off a little shaky.
A little shaky, yeah.
A little bit. And so he goes, what's up? You nervous, man? You all right? It was just great.
It was awesome, man. It was the highlight of the spring for me.
I didn't record anything from that.
Oh.
I just sat back and watched.
Oh, I was listening to that recording throughout the whole game on Saturday just to make me forget about what I was watching.
That's good. I like that. All right, Mike, you got a major?
Yeah, all right. This one, Adam had to remind me of this one. But it was a positive for me. So like I said earlier, this was my, I believe, 30th game. 30th time covering a game in the Swamp.
You're old.
Never once did I receive a parking pass, despite multiple requests for a parking pass. I got one for the spring game, and I gotta tell you, it felt great. I didn't even use it. I used our roommate, Kyle. He drove, used his pass. I'm saving mine. And I'm gonna staple it to this email chain that I have from last year where I was trying to get a parking pass again. We always have to park at the Alligator or at Norman Hall, which, if y'all are familiar with campus, you know. And then it's a nice little walk from there. It's usually hot. You get all sweaty. Meanwhile, all these other guys, some of whom don't really even cover the team on a daily basis, show up and get a pass. So I sent this very polite email last year, you know, asking for a pass. I got shut down with an "I apologize for the inconvenience" email back. And then it was, you know, we don't give them to students. So now that I graduated, it's cool. You know, it's everything's changed.
Clearly.
Now. Yeah, whole game changer. And this is part of what I said in the email. At one point I said, "I find it hard to believe there isn't one spot in that lot for us. I promise we won't roll up in a motorhome, aircraft carrier." And at the end, I was like, "Thanks for hearing me out. Please let me know either way, but I'd love the chance to show off my flashy parking skills for the ESPN drives." So that's pretty much what we're dealing with, right? Parking pass.
Wow.
In this town. And wow. I finally got one, and it really did. It felt glorious. I mean, the walk was so short.
Right.
To the game, I wasn't sweaty. It was wonderful.
Right. It was like being a normal reporter. Porter.
Like a professional?
Yeah, big boy.
A little bit, yeah. Nice. It's nice. I enjoy that.
I gotta say, this is definitely the least professionally I've been treated as a reporter of anywhere that I've worked, which isn't a lot of places, but I had a couple internships, worked with a lot of PR people over the years, even at different SEC schools, you know, going on road trips. They always give you parking passes. They always roll out the red carpet. They treat you like they would anyone else who is responsible for representing their university in print to hundreds of thousands of people, except for here at the University of Florida, where, you know, continually we get crapped on by Steve McClain, the good people at the University Athletic Association. So, you know, big shout out to them. But hey, they gave me a pass. So thank you. You did a major, which I would never have given you otherwise.
I was going to say that was actually a major. I've forgotten what my Chang was. My Wandy. I had a Wandy somewhere in here. All that negativity was like coming out of me too.
You want me to go first?
I can go first. Yeah, right.
I'll
your Wandy.
I'll even go second.
All right, I had one.
My Wandy, I'm gonna give it to the Tampa Bay Rays. Summer internship. I have a summer internship covering them for MLB.com. I've been trying to follow them, you know, read up on them, research them. Started off the year 1-8, so it's gonna be a fun season in Tampa with full of 200 people in attendance watching a team in probably third, fourth place in the division. So I'll give them the Wandy.
No Manny.
No Manny. No.
Now who's going to... Or Sean Rodriguez is still going to be your best friend.
Yeah. He's,
you guys are going.
Yeah. We're like the same guy.
You are. Yeah.
Same age. Cuban from Miami. Yeah. I can't go wrong there.
Both very chill. Both very relaxed.
Yeah.
Both very smiley.
Yeah, exactly.
You guys get along great. God, I wish I could be there.
They might be worse than my Mariners this year, so yeah. Suck all in that.
Their hitting is probably just as bad. They can't hit... They can't... By runs.
Which is rough, man. My Brantley, no surprise, going to John Brantley. I gotta say, like, I really do respect this guy for everything that he's been through and how professionally he's handled it. He's never cracked. He's never looked like a punk. He's always been very gracious with the media. Never been a problem. And I really do respect him for that. But at the same time, not cutting it as a quarterback, I don't really see how this could end well for him. And a really disappointing Wandy to have to give out, because I'd like to see him succeed. I'd like to see him not be the sole agent of the apocalypse of the 2011 Florida football season, but it's kind of looking like it's headed that way.
Yeah.
On a positive note, I did slap hands with Joe Kim Noah yesterday.
Really?
Yeah. Went to a Magic Bulls game. My friend had some like pretty incredible seats.
That was an awesome game, too.
Yeah, it was so cool. And Jameer Nelson hits a buzzer beater to tie it, but it doesn't count. It's all right, because we still got the thrill of a buzzer beater, because we all thought it counted at first. But at halftime, you know, my friend went into the Bulls tunnel and to high-five the players, and they came through. Got to be a fan again. It was cool.
Sure, yeah.
Got a nice high-five from Joe Kim Noah. And then we were trying to get Derrick Rose when he came down, because, you know, MVP.
Right.
Slapped hands with the MVP a couple games before the playoffs started. Instead... Despite the fact that they're winning and he's got like 20 points at halftime, he's walking down the tunnel, just cursing up a storm, just so angry. I don't know what he's angry about. Life is good for you.
Yeah.
You clinched the number one spot in the East. And, like, who cares, dude? Calm down. Wow. I'm just saying you're a competitor, but he just looked like a punk, and there are all these kids in the tunnel just want to slap hands with Derrick Rose, you know? Yeah. And he's just cussing and yada, yada,
it's the NBA right there.
And he's standing on the other side of the tunnel, like, trying to get us far away from everybody.
I think Jameer Nelson, to be fair, I think Jameer Nelson hit a buzzer beater at the end of the first half
as well. He did.
So I think he was upset about that.
But Rose had already gone and done, like, two interviews on the court. It wasn't like he came right off after the buzzer beater and was ticked, which... I should give myself a laundry for that, because we go stand in the tunnel, and all I can see, I look out, and I can see the hoop and the clock, but it's the other hoop from the one we're So, like, I just look out, and I see the clock ticking down, and it goes red, and then I just see everybody go, But yeah, Rose had time. He had already, like, been talking to reporters and his coach and stuff after that, so he should have had time to cool down. I don't know.
Maybe
I don't know what it was. Even then, if what you're that upset about is 3 points when you've already clinched the number one seed and you're going to be MVP.
So makes him the best, man. Okay. He always wants to be better.
That's true. That's true. I like that. All right, I did remember what mine was. It's also related to the Orange and Blue debut on Saturday. I'm going to give mine to the whole concept of the guest media coaches.
That's right.
On Saturday, four members of the esteemed Florida media, Pat Dooley, the Gainesville Sun, Joe Henderson of the Tampa Tribune, Mike Bianchi, the Orlando Sentinel, and Steve Russell from
WRUF,
the Gator Radio Network. They were elected to be guest coaches in name only for the Orange and Blue game, split up into twos, Joe Henderson and Pat Dooley on the blue team, the other two on the orange side. And the whole situation seemed a little screwy from the beginning, because everybody disavowed all knowledge when it happened. I was in the room with Bianchi when he claims to have found out about it, which was at media when we were handed a press release about the whole situation. It seemed a little dubious. I read his description of what he was doing to him, and he was like, oh, neat. The whole thing was just very sketchy. And I like some of the guys. I worked a lot with Joe over the summer and the fall down in Tampa. But the whole situation was just bad, because you look at what the three columnists wrote, and it's all the same. It's all about, despite the fact that they got unfiltered access from team breakfast to end of the game on the sidelines, they all wrote about the Gator Walk, the Will Muschamp's pregame speech, Charlie Weiss's little spiel lecture about play calling, and the Charlie Weiss joke about John Brantley running the option.
Yeah, you can repeat that one.
It's like,
that was funny. I
like John Brantley will run the option. You can count the number of times John Brantley will run the option on no hands.
Yeah.
Which is a great quote from Charlie Weiss, and that should have been in the things. But it was just a little mysterious that all four wrote about the exact same things, and that also, you know who provided a better look inside the Orange and Blue game than that? Scott Carter on Gator Zone.
Yeah.
Who had the exact same access, and he's doing it from a pro UAA standpoint. Yeah. You would think that three unbiased journalists,
they were probably restricted to only writing about the
In which case, all this talk about the all access pass they're given, not true.
Yeah. Right.
And you know what? You could have just dropped me in there for the pregame speech and the Charlie for like 5 minutes of Charlie Weiss, and I could have written the exact same thing.
Yeah, it's not really openness. They also didn't get to call play, which is what Muschamp said they do. I don't really see how that would cause that much. Probably. How are they going to be worse?
Yeah, it looked like they were calling plays.
Yeah, I don't know. My only thing that rubbed me the wrong way is I didn't get the Joe Henderson selection. I don't know who that is. I don't think he's up here very often.
Like, no.
They could have picked somebody else who, like, actually is around the
program. It would have, like, a Gene Fredette. If you're going to do a columnist, would have made sense. The thing about Joe, and this is, they were all very smart moves from the UAA's perspective. Pat Dooley, because you have to.
Right.
Because he's sort of the guy here. Uh-huh. Bianchi, because look at the way that Bianchi writes about Florida basketball, because he and Billy Donovan talk and they get along well. Now look at the way Bianchi writes about Florida football, very negatively, because Urban Meyer yelled at Fowler and they just don't get along. If they can get Bianchi on their good side, Bianchi's just going to love him.
Yeah.
So you can get a very powerful state voice on your side. And then Joe, I thought about this, hit me this morning. I was wondering about, like, it still didn't make any sense to me, because my ethics professor actually asked me to, I told you this earlier, actually asked me to send an email to him with, like, my analysis of the whole situation. And Henderson makes sense because the Trib would not have had anybody here.
Hmm.
Otherwise, the Trib would have had no coverage of the Orange and Blue game in their paper.
Oh,
so if you can get a columnist who will be on the front sports page no matter what he writes to write about all of this great things Florida did, you know, for the media, for the Tampa Tribune, that's going to provide very favorable coverage to an area.
Shrewd move. I like that.
That's what I'm saying.
That's how the game is played right there.
Right. And Steve Russell, everyone agrees, that's kind of like the consensus. That was a nice thing to do, move. Yeah. You know, like he's a team guy.
Been here for a long time.
Right. Yeah. He's got some youth football coaching experience.
I feel
experience.
Pretty good about Steve coaching. Yeah. Honestly, like, I think he could probably do a pretty good job.
So, yeah, that one was good, but, like, it was a smart move on their part. I just didn't like the way it was handled by the media. And one of them, who works for the Orlando Sentinel but shall remain nameless, wore a shirt that said in giant letters,
media.
With 15 on the back.
Did they give those shirts?
No. I think that was like a softball team he played on.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I'll accept that. Yeah. It's still the 15.
The 15 guys
really makes it seem
very ironic. I don't know.
It adds to it, though.
Right. Yeah. But then you look at the fact, and they all, like, and this person wrote, and then they all wrote in the columns, like, when they were doing the Gator Walk, which is just the highlight of their lives, you could tell, they sent, like, some random fan screamed, "Go Media," at him, as if they recognized him as a member of the media.
Yeah, yeah.
No, they didn't. You're wearing a shirt that says media in giant letters across it. I could wear a shirt that says Adam in giant letters across it. People are going to scream, "Hey, Adam." Of course. It's not because they know me. It's because it says Adam on my shirt.
That's true.
So, like, the whole thing was very disingenuous. Like, if you want to read a legitimate, like, complete, like, you know where it's coming from account, behind the scenes of the Orange and Blue debut, read Scott Carter's on Gator Zone. Scott was there for a purpose. Everyone knows that. The whole thing just seemed a little dubious and a little shady.
This is kind of, I don't know how the inside sports journalism segment is going, but this is kind of more.
Actually, it is,
Scott, I got to say, with Scott Carter, it's really interesting what they're doing. So they hired a reporter, a very experienced reporter who used to cover FSU for Tampa.
Tribune,
to work on Gator Zone. And at first it was like, okay, Scott's not going to have any access different from you guys. This is just a way around on the website. I'm like, it's really smart. Either way, even if he's getting stuff that no one else does, because you might as well drive people to your website and make money off of it. And that tide seems to be turning now, because before, Scott was only getting stuff at press conferences where everybody else was. Now, he's like doing all kinds of stuff. Appeared to have gone on the team's paintball outing with him.
He did, yeah.
Doing a lot more behind-the-scenes stuff, which is great. I encourage you all to go read it. Scott's a great guy. He's pretty much free of having to write about negative stuff on there, which is good and bad. You lose a little part of your soul, which he's talked to me about. But at the same time, like, it's less stressful, more fun. You just get to write.
He's a hero, too.
Yeah, right. So,
and I've noticed that he's not at really media opportunities anymore for players. Yeah. I never see him there. Yeah. Maybe at the press conferences, like, for Muschamp, like, that first one.
Yeah, that was
a big
it,
one.
Though.
But that's really about good. It. Yeah. He doesn't need it. Like, I know he was out there painting the field for the scrimmage.
That's true, yeah.
Right.
Painting the field.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
He's
though,
doing
I mean.
Very yeah. cool stuff yeah. that, like, media should probably have the opportunity to do.
Exactly.
But the thing is that the UIA can control it. And honestly, from their perspective, why shouldn't they?
Right.
It makes perfect sense.
At the end of the day, you can't, like, if there was a atmosphere of openness already with this program where people would have an opportunity to do things like that, like, you know, say the way like Georgia operates, they would have less problems with everyone in general. Instead, they've kind of decided that instead of being an open program, they like to give the appearance of being open through their own website.
Right.
So.
I have to give them credit, though. They are pretty good at controlling information and what leaks about them. For us, it's tough. It makes it tough on us, but they're pretty good at their jobs.
They're all good at their jobs, and it's maddening. It's just if they were a little more nice about how good, about how good they were at their jobs,
they're just
a
like
more
stick
open.
It in our face. They're like, we're so good.
I just still think it's the wrong way to go about it.
Oh, it is.
In the end, it's probably going to bite them. I mean, look, a storm's going to hit at some point. You know, like with what Auburn's going through right now. Like, let's not act like Florida's not guilty of all the same things, if not worse.
Yeah.
And when it happens, then you know, I mean, they took a lot of flack for all the Urban Meyer arrests, in part because of the way that they treat the media. And you know, most people that I talk to in the sports reporting world hate Steve McClain, the guy who runs the information department. Talked to a sports editor today, in fact, who dislikes Steve McClain very much and the way that he does his job. And at some point, that's probably going to bite him. Maybe it won't, but you'd think it would. You'd hope it would.
Right. Justice.
Deep down, I really am dying for that.
Right.
In 15 years, I'll look back and see something horrible happen. I'm going to stand and applaud.
You know what Justin Timberlake says? What comes around?
No.
Nope.
That's not. That's what he said. There you go.
That's
he'd be so offended.
Sorry, JT. I apologize.
Yeah, all right. Let's get out of here. Send any feedback to podcast@alligator.org. You can find us on Twitter, twitter.com/alligatorsports, @AdamDBerry if you want to watch a Christian Provancha, a.k.a. Provolone video. You can find Chang at
Chang_reaction.
And Mike, where can people read and find you?
You can find me at Mike McCall on Twitter. Gator Claws, the Miami Herald's blog, or you can stop by Mochi Frozen Yogurt in Midtown Gainesville.
Yeah.
I'll be working there too. Gotta get that money.
Stop by and tell them you love Mochi.
You get a dollar off.
It's good times. All right, we will be back next week. Next week might be the final Alligator Sports podcast of the Adam Berry era. Very emotional. There will be tears. You will laugh. You will cry. You will stand and applaud by the time it's all said and done. So check back next week. Thanks for listening.